let me state something very obvious. The most important things that happen in this world are the things that God does. The most important things that happen in the Bible are the things that God does. And the most important things that happen in our lives are the things that God does. But in our sin, without Christ in our life, all we want to do is suppress and ignore and get out of our thinking any awareness of God. So, therefore, an essential first step that God must take in our salvation is to turn the light on in our mind and our heart so that the God that we hated and despised suddenly becomes for us altogether lovely. And he does that work. It's part of his gracious work of saving us. Today, we have an amazing story to consider, a story of God at work and the blessing of knowing that God is at work. You know, before Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's two dreams, Joseph interpreted a couple of other dreams, and Pharaoh had heard about that. That's why he called on Joseph. Those two fellow prisoners that Joseph met there in Pharaoh's prison, actually two of Pharaoh's employees, Pharaoh's cupbearer and Pharaoh's baker, each had a dream. Today we are considering both chapter 40 and chapter 41. So I asked Boyd to read the second interpretation part, the part about Pharaoh's dream. Now I want to read with you a major portion of chapter 40, talking about these two other guys and their dreams and the fulfillment. So let me start reading for us at chapter 40, verse 9. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said, "In my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." Then Joseph said to him, "This is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that should put me into the pit." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, "I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head." And Joseph answered and said, "This is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree. And the birds will eat the flesh from you. On the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him." Well, in these two chapters, chapter 40 and then chapter 41, from which Boyd read, I want to list for you, once again, the twos that I find here. We saw when the Joseph story started in chapter 37, lots of doublings, Lots of things happening twice. Lots of things said twice. Just doubles, doubles, doubles. I call them all the twos. Then we had chapter 38, which was about Judah. No twos, no doublings there. And then last week we saw in chapter 39 a whole bunch more repetitions, doublings, a bunch of twos. Well, what do we have now in 40 and 41? Here's my list. Two prisoners, two dreams, two interpretations, two fulfillments, 2 years more that Joseph will spend in prison. Then, from what Boyd read, two dreams of Pharaoh, two statements of no one could interpret the dreams, two statements of God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do, two periods of 7 years talked about, two statements about discerning and wise. The first one from Joseph. Now Pharaoh selects someone who is discerning and wise, who can collect grain during these 7 years of plenty, so we'll be okay during the 7 years of famine. And then another discerning and wise statement where Pharaoh kind of goes, Hank, good idea, good idea. And then looks at Joseph and said, hey, you seem pretty discerning and wise. Maybe I'll put you in charge of that project. So two discerning and wise statements. Two statements of Jesus being over Pharaoh's realm. Two mentions of Joseph's wife. Two mentions of Joseph traveling throughout the land. Two mentions of Joseph gathering grain. Two mentions of this extra grain being put in cities. Two sons born to Joseph. Two reports of famine everywhere. That's said twice. It doesn't need to be, right? And then finally, two reports that the famine was severe. And here in the portion that Boyd read, the final verse that Boyd read for us, we are given the interpretive clue that we have been longing for as to what all these twos, all these doublings in the Joseph story are all about. Chapter 41, verse 32, Joseph says to Pharaoh, the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God and God will shortly bring it about. Fixed by God, God will do it. That's what the doubles, the twos, are all about. We needed Joseph to be God's mouthpiece to let us know what these twos are all about. I don't know any other part of the Bible where this happens. If God had not inspired and instructed Joseph to say it to us and then inspire Moses to write it for us, we'd be left in the realm of speculation. But right within this story that covers so many chapters, where there's so many repeatings, we are given the needed clue. The doubling has to do with the idea of something being fixed by God and God will do it. In other words, God has a plan and God is working his plan. Remember, these twos are all throughout the Joseph story. So now we understand that whatever the twos mean, it applies to the entire Joseph story. And here's what it is. God has a plan for Joseph and he is working that plan. God is, in other words, God is fully involved in Joseph's life. In other words, Joseph's life is a God project. When we read the story of Joseph, we are watching God at work, not just in the good stuff that happens to Joseph, but in all of the stuff. So Joseph says to Pharaoh that the two dreams, the fact that Pharaoh had two dreams that meant the same thing instead of just one thing, Joseph explains that's like God's guarantee. That's like God's signature that this will indeed happen. And let's just admit it's unusual. It's an unusual way for God to make his presence known. But that's what he does in Joseph's life. And Moses, inspired by God, makes it absolutely clear and actually reinforces it. Because some of the doublings are things that happen. Others of the doublings are things that people say twice. And other times, there are actually simply two times that Moses, with the program, wanting to be inspired by God and reinforce the message, simply chooses to say the same thing twice to make it crystal clear to us that this is supposed to tell us that God is involved in Joseph's life right down to the littlest details. Every action, every event, every conversation, God is there working his plan. It's like God is saying, Joseph, your life is fixed, planned by me. Your life is planned by me. God saying to Joseph, and I am working out my plan. Every bit of your life, Joseph, is my plan for you. Now, let me give the caveat, the warning right up front. You know, since we don't see this other places in the Bible, since this seems to be a uniquely Joseph thing, let's not start looking for God's guidance in our lives by looking for twos, right? I mean, I'm seeking to know God's will for what kind of car I should buy next. And wow, in the last 10 minutes, I've seen the same Honda commercial twice. It must be, no, let's not do that. But if in this story, the message of the doublings is to say that God is at work, let's remind ourselves of the Joseph story and remind ourselves of what God has been bringing into Joseph's life to let us know that nothing in Joseph's life was out from under the controlling, providing hand of God. Let's remind ourselves, let's race through the story. Joseph dreams that his family will one day bow down to him, and Joseph tells his family that those dreams, and his brothers hate him because of that. It's like Joseph lording himself over them. And then Jacob sends Joseph out to check on his brothers. The brothers see Joseph from a distance, so they have time to rekindle their hatred toward their favorite little brother. They have time to think about and talk about how much they hate him. They have time to talk about how much they want to kill him. But then they decide to modify that plan and throw him into a pit. And that's what they do. And then, right on cue, God's hand, the Ishmaelites come by. And Judah says, let's sell him. Let's not kill him. He's our brother after all. Let's sell him. And Joseph is sold as a slave. Let me just remind you what this is all about. There were twos back there. That was part of God's plan. That day they pulled him out of that pit and sold him as a slave. God was working his plan in Joseph's life. He becomes a slave in Potiphar's house, rises to prominence. But then there's Potiphar's wife, who day after day after day seeks to seduce him. And Joseph shows moral strength under that. But then she falsely accuses Joseph of attempting to rape her, and he is thrown into prison. Part of God's plan. In prison, Joseph rises to prominence, just like he did in Potiphar's house. And Joseph meets the cupbearer and the baker. Joseph is enabled by God to interpret their dreams. That's part of God's plan for Joseph. And then the cupbearer therefore learns of Joseph's ability to interpret dreams. And then Joseph spends two more years in prison. Where is it? Chapter 41, verse 1. After two whole years, Pharaoh dreamed. Part of God's plan. Think of 2 years. I've only been with you guys a year and a half. We're not to the 2-year mark yet, but a lot of water under the bridge during that time. 2 years is a long time just because the cupbearer forgot to mention Joseph to Pharaoh, but it's part of God's plan. We don't understand what those 2 years must have meant, why God had that. But then Pharaoh dreams two dreams. The cupbearer remembers Joseph. Joseph boldly talks to Pharaoh about God, and Pharaoh receives that. Joseph becomes second in power in Egypt, part of God's plan. Joseph uses his administrative skill to collect grain for 7 years, and then Joseph saves Egypt and the whole ancient Near Eastern world from death by famine. God's plan. Look at the last two verses of chapter 41. So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt, to Joseph, to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth. God is showing himself to be present and active in both the good and the bad stuff of Joseph's life. God planned Joseph's life, and then he worked the plan. Now, every human action and feeling and conversation and decision, everything the humans do in this story is real. Every word is real. Every human choice is real. Everything the brothers did was real, and it was real sin. Everything Potiphar did, everything Potiphar's wife did, it was real, just acting freely out of the desires of their heart. The prison warden, the prisoners, and Joseph. Everything everybody does is real human stuff. Everybody's doing what they most want to do. If they have an evil heart, they want to do all this evil stuff. If, like Joseph, a good heart, good stuff proceeds. Everyone is freely living as they choose, but God is in it all, accomplishing his purposes. And yes, our heads are supposed to spin at that thought, that we can have a world in which everyone does what they want to do, and that's the way we're wired. We will only ever do what we want to do. That's why God has to do such a mighty work in our heart to get us to want to live for him. Otherwise, all we want to do is sin, and we will happily sin all our lives of our own free will, and we will pay the consequences of living out the desires of our heart. This story is intended to show off God behind the scenes, to spotlight God behind all the stuff that the humans do in this story. And this is not only Moses writing what actually happened so that Moses, the writer, is showing off God for us readers, but we actually see Joseph showing off God, spotlighting God to Pharaoh, even in Joseph's words. Joseph's words are God-guided and God-glorifying. I just have snippets jotted down here so I can quickly show you the way Joseph boldly talks about the one true God to Pharaoh. All in chapter 41, verse 16. It is not me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Verse 25, God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. Hey, how about a repetition? Verse 28, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Verse 32, the thing is fixed by God and God will shortly bring it about. And then look at verse 39. In verse 39, Pharaoh says, since God has shown you all this. You realize how bold Joseph is to talk to Pharaoh about the one true God? In Egypt, Pharaoh is God. Pharaoh is a god in Egypt. We have to assume that there was some risk of Joseph's very life in talking so boldly about the one true God to Pharaoh, but he does. And Pharaoh, for all we know at that time in history, was not only the most powerful man in Egypt, for all we know he was the most powerful man in the world, and here he is acknowledging the one true God. This story shows us God sovereignly working out his purposes in and through Joseph. And let's see how Joseph sums it all up at the end of the story. Chapter 50, verse 20, Joseph speaking to his brothers. As for you, my brothers, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive, as they are today. Kind of the summary statement of the whole Joseph story from chapter 37 through chapter 50. God meant it all for good. Thrown into the pit, sold as a slave, thrown into prison, even all that bad stuff. God meant it for good. That's Joseph's summary of his life. Now, remember, We are just continuing on with the Abraham and the Abraham seed story. We started this journey back in chapter 12, where we saw God promise Abraham land, seed, and blessing. So in terms of the promises to Abraham story, what's Joseph doing here in this story? Joseph is blessing the world. He is blessing the world. He is saving the world from death by famine. Abraham, in your seed shall all the nations be blessed. And here's one small aspect to that. The final, the ultimate, the supreme example of a seed of Abraham blessing the world has to wait another 2,000 years until Jesus blesses the world as Emmanuel, God with us, the Savior of the world. But here's a little piece of that Abrahamic promise. Hey, all along, we've understood this Joseph story to be the quintessential picture of God's sovereignty in action in a life. It is known for that. And we say how cool for God to work everything in Joseph's life for good. We look at that story and we might be tempted to say, if only God worked in our lives like he worked in Joseph's life. If only God was working everything out for good in my life like he did in Joseph's life. And the biblical answer is, he is. Oh yes, he is. We might assume, of course, that this Joseph story is just an anomaly, just a God and Joseph thing, that it doesn't work this way for everybody. But the Bible has some bold assertions that I want to share about God's universal rule, his universal sovereignty, to show us that the way God worked in Joseph's life is the way he is always working. Working in every detail. So let me just share with you some mind-blowing verses about what God claims to be his role in his world. Jesus said, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. Psalm 139:16. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there were none of them. Proverbs 16:33. The lot is cast in the lap, but every decision is from the Lord. God is sovereign over every time anyone has ever rolled a dice. How bold, how brash of God to make such a claim, but it's God's claim. It's true. Proverbs 21:1. The king's heart is a stream of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he will. Psalm 115:3. Our God is in the heavens. He does all that he pleases. Daniel 4:35, he, God, does according to his will among the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand. Isaiah 45:7, I am the Lord, there is no other. I form light and I create darkness. Listen to what else God claims to do. I make well-being and I create calamity. I am the Lord, who does all things. Deuteronomy 32:39. See now that I, even I, am he, and there is no God beside me. Now listen to what God claims for his activity in his world. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. And there is none that can deliver out of my hand. In Lamentations 3:37-38, who has spoken and it came to pass unless the Lord has commanded it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that good and bad come? In Romans 8:28, And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. The good there, of course, is not our human ideas of good. It's not health, not wealth, not comfort, but it is to be conformed to the image of Christ, because the next verse says, for those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of Christ. That is the good, that everything that happens to us, God is working toward and in us. And then a beautiful summary verse of all of this, Ephesians 1:11, God works all things according to the counsel of his will. I find myself left with no wiggle room. God is claiming to be sovereign over everything. He is claiming to be in control of everything. Falling sparrows, casting lots, king's decisions, well-being and calamity, wounding and healing, life and death, good and bad. These verses let us know that God wants us stunned. He wants us in awe. He wants us worshiping him for his kingly rule over everything that's going on in our lives right now. We, if we were writing the Bible, we would so want to let God off the hook and say, no, that's not from God. That mess in your life, that's not from God. And God doesn't allow us the room to do that. He says, everything, you have to see everything in your life as from my hand, God says. This truth that God is in control of everything, I think it's supposed to be the supreme comfort for us in this pain-filled world. And I think it is that if we surrender the way we are supposed to surrender to this all-supreme God. So if we're going to find comfort and realize that the unbelieving world hates a God that is this claiming of control, it's only going to be us believers, and as we work to surrender, that we'll actually find comfort and give God glory for the kind of sovereign control that he is claiming to hold over our lives. But if we surrender to his glory as our ultimate purpose, and if we surrender to allow his ways, to admit that his ways are higher, that is better than our ways, and if we surrender to his good as a better good than all of our ideas of what good should look like in our lives, and if we will surrender to his pleasure being our ultimate pleasure, then I think this is where we run when life is a mess and painful. We run to the God who says, even this is from my hand, and I'm at work. One more passage. Philippians 2:12-13. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you. So let's make one thing really clear. The fact that God is claiming this kind of control does not give any of us the freedom to just sit back and say, if God's that sovereign, I got nothing to do. He's the one who commands, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to work for his good pleasure. There is a variable here, and a constant here, and a goal here. The variable is quite obvious. You and me working out our salvation. Sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we obey and sometimes we sin. Sometimes we're full of faith and sometimes we're full of doubt and anger. Working out our salvation is the variable here. But what's the constant? It is God who works in you. That's the constant. He never stops. He never stops working in us. I remember I've told you about that season of straying in my teen years, of 3 or 4 years, where I sure looked like a Christian to all outward appearances, but in my heart I was rebelling against God. I was disobeying God. Was God working out my salvation then? Oh yeah, every day I felt his hand of conviction heavy upon me. I was not working out my salvation as I should, but God was at work in me, and I felt it every day of that season of rebellion. This is the reason why we are supposed to work out our salvation, because God is at work constantly in our lives, and there's a goal here too, for his good pleasure. We're supposed to live for God's pleasure, but here is the secret. Here is the blessed, blessed secret. If we decide to live for God's pleasure, we get to feel his pleasure as we walk with him. And to me, that's the best definition I'm finding of joy. Joy is feeling God's pleasure. At the end of Joseph's story, he says, God meant it all for good. At the end of your life, if you're a believer, know that the sovereign God is at work in your life. And at the end of your life, whether this side of death or whether it's going to have to, for you, have to wait till the other side of death, but at the end of your life, you will say that too. God meant it for good. He worked it all together for his good. We should sit in silent awe before a God that big. He is our God. He has condescended to us. That is the God that lives within our hearts. And that is the God that gives every disease for his purposes, allows every accident for his purposes. Everything is from his hand. But look at his hand, and look who's in his hand. You are safely in the hands of your King. Let's stand together for our closing chorus. Then after our closing chorus, don't scatter, because I have a couple more words. We are going to transition.